We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/lawless. Just go to Indeed.com/lawless right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/lawless. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And Messi doing not just messy, magical things, but in this context, historical things. This is why he leads the show. This is why you talk about him. Whether you like him or not is irrelevant, to be quite honest with you, because you're still going to click. Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lalas, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast. We look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue color glasses. This show, we'll be talking Columbus whining, Holland rising, Ripley, Mossy does New York, MLS first Liga MX gap, the European schedule, soccer politics, Pop-Tarts, and so much more. But first, joining me as always, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. Mossy, how you doing on this Monday, May 6th in the year 2024? And for those watching, you can see Mossy is on the road. You're in New York over there, aren't you, my friend?
Correct. I'm doing well. This is my annual sojourn to New York to visit the parents for a week. Excited to be here. I arrived on Saturday, so the trip is just starting.
How are your parents? How's everybody over there? Good?
They're doing great. Yeah, they're excited to have me. Yeah, we have lots of stuff planned for the next few days.
So yeah, you mentioned you're going to see a show, right? And what about any sports? Any sports on the docket?
Yes, Tuesday night I'm going to a Yankees game, Yankees Astros. We've also got a couple of Knicks games this week against the Pacers. I don't have tickets yet, but we'll see. Maybe I can figure out a way to get into MSG for one of those games.
Now, you've seen this play out. What differentiates a Mets New York fan from a Yankees New York fan? Is it something that you can put your finger on? Is it a personality quirk? Is it a feature? Is it something in their history? What is it?
No, Yankee fans tend to be more smug. Well, Mets fans have a little bit of that little brother complex. Although, you know, a lot of people who aren't from New York think it's like a Lakers-Clippers dynamic, and it's not that pronounced. I've lived in L.A. for 10 years. I've never met a Clippers fan. While a lot of my friends growing up are Mets fans, it's probably more like 65-35, the breakdown. The Mets have a lot of fans. They get a lot of attention. They've had periods where they were the better team. They've won championships. So it's not as pronounced as Lakers-Clippers, but they are that quote-unquote second team, so they have a bit of an inferiority complex about that.
What was your fandom, your Yankee fandom, relative to your parents or a friend, or how did it manifest?
I caught that when I started getting into baseball, it was that great championship run they had with Joe Torre, Derek Jeter. So I admit it was a bit of a bandwagon thing. When I started getting into baseball, living in New York, they were the best team and winning titles. So I couldn't help but gravitate to them.
Timing. It's everything in life, including sports. Have you watched anything?
Actually, I want to take you back to before I left for New York. Last Thursday, I attended a comedy show at the Hollywood Bowl, headlined by Jerry Seinfeld. He was okay. I actually thought a couple of the warm-up acts were funnier, including the Sebastian Maniscalco, who I have not laughed that hard in a long time. He was absolutely phenomenal. The show overall was great. I love that venue. Love going there. It's my number one thing I recommend people do in LA if they're visiting at the right time of year for it. But yeah, Seinfeld, I thought, was just okay as a stand-up. And then upon arriving in New York, my parents picked me up at the airport. The first thing they said to me was, "We just watched the Seinfeld movie Unfrosted, and it's one of the worst movies we've ever seen in our lives." So Seinfeld took a bit of a hit in my family in the last
few days. Wow. Keeping with the baseball motif, he seems to have lost his fastball. I cannot tell you how horrible this is. And I like you, I love Jerry Seinfeld. I think he's obviously he's just an incredible talent, generational type of comedian and commenter, obviously, on the world. This is unwatchable. It's horrible. At no point during this production, which had to have cost a bunch of money, given all of the famous people in it, and the production value that you can certainly see, at no point did anybody turn to Jerry or whoever was in charge. He's in charge, and say, this is not good. This is not going to be good. It is horrible. I could not even get through it. I can't tell if it's a pure comedy, if it's a satire, if I'm missing the point. It's just got no rhyme or reason. And most importantly, it's not funny. It's that at no time was I laughing. And these are some talented, funny people that are in it. But yeah, it was horrible. So big thumbs down for me. Your parents are absolutely right. You can watch it if you want and try to get through it, but I challenge you to try to even make it to the end. What I did make to the end was Ripley, the latest take on the talented Mr. Ripley. If you remember way back, I mean, when I saw it and it came to me, because I didn't read the book. I saw it with what's his name? Matt Damon, and what's his name? Jude Law, I guess it would be, and Gwyneth Paltrow. And I thought they did a really, really good job. Seymour Hoffman was in it. The late Seymour Hoffman was in it. I thought they did a really good job. But that was in the form of a specific movie, you know, a 90-minute type of thing. And I thought it was perfect, well told, incredibly shot, and, you know, it's a really, really good movie. And so this is the latest take on it. And this is a perfect example of why the episodal type of situation that goes on can lead to people being, from a creative perspective, just masturbating relative to the film and the creativity that they're doing, all right? It's way too long. It is trying so hard to be arty for a number of different reasons, not the least of which it's in black and white. Everything takes forever, and I'm sure it's because you want to see the art and you want to see, you know, a much slower paced type of storytelling. No. There's a difference between quality, slow-paced type of storytelling and just being boring. And I got through it. It's not as bad as Unfrosted, but it's not great. Acting actually was good. I thought the actors were really, really good. But this should have been an actual movie as opposed to however many episodes it was that I finally forced myself to finish up. It just took way too long. And again, it's disrespectful to the viewer because you were given all of this opportunity to just go on for hours and hours and hours and not really do anything. So a good editor would have cut this thing down to an actual movie. Mossy.
It's gotten very good reviews. I'm planning to watch it, so yeah. We'll see what I have to say about it.
Okay, cool. All right, I got so riled up about the Unfrosted thing, Mossy, that I've started sweating through my shirt here, okay? So, you know, for those that are watching, I won't make you look at my pit stains for the rest of the show. So I'm going to put my shirt on here. But where should we start, my friend?
We're going to begin with the CONCACAF Champions Cup. We taped our last podcast last Wednesday afternoon, so we couldn't talk about the Monterrey-Columbus second leg. But we think what Columbus achieved that night was so significant that it merits addressing today. Remember, they had won the semifinal first leg 2-1 at home. They then won 3-1 at the Stadio BBVA. Monterrey took the lead through a Chiberca own goal. And then late in the first half, Aiden Morris equalized, capitalizing on a terrible distribution mistake by Esteban Andrada. Then in the second half, Diego Rossi and Russell Rowe scored. Columbus completing a 5-2 aggregate triumph. They've eliminated Tigres and Monterrey in successive rounds. They are off to the final where they will face Pachuca in a one-off game June 1st at the Stadio Hidalgo.
Okay, so first off, congratulations are in order in that the Columbus crew continue to fly the flag, not just for Columbus, but for Major League Soccer in this tournament. And as we mentioned, if you're going to put all your eggs in one basket, it's a pretty good basket to put it in terms of their ability, already their proven ability in this tournament to go on the road, to get results, And like I said, to fly that flag and to do it stylistically in a way that doesn't betray what Wilfred Nancy has tried to implement when it comes to this team. And yes, at times they can certainly get pragmatic, but they are romantic in the way that they play. Now, this result was not a smash and grab. This result was, I'll be honest, once the game got going, was never in question. Columbus was far and away the better team and deserved this victory. And now, you know, they're one win away, yet again on the road in Mexico, so they are used to it, from being the champions of CONCACAF. So wonderful news for Columbus, wonderful news for Major League Soccer. I'm sure that Don Garber breathed a sigh of relief because that narrative about the pendulum swinging back and forth and the sky is falling, woe is me, after the first couple of rounds that involved MLS teams, and this was going to be another, you know, a harbinger of things to come and problematic for MLS and what's going on. And Wilfred Nancy and company said, no, not so fast. We got this going forward. But still work to be done. But again, congratulations to the Columbus crew.
Now, in light of this recent triumph, a lot of people hearken back to the episode a few years ago when their owner, Anthony Precourt, tried to move the team to Austin. The fans started a movement to save the crew. The crew ended up staying in Columbus under different ownership, and Anthony Precourt got himself an expansion team in Austin. You posted on X that Columbus fans should be thanking Anthony Precourt and Don Garber for that whole episode, which was an interesting enough take for the Columbus Dispatch to write an article about it. Would you like to expand today?
Well, first off, you're welcome, Columbus Dispatch, if that's even a newspaper. So you're welcome for giving you content. It's what we do here on the State of the Union on a continual basis. Listen, when it comes to the Columbus Crew fans that were, God, they were really whiny, Mossy, in my X feed over there. They got all bent out of shape and got their panties in a bunch there when it came to what I said. So I will try to explain myself, and I'll use simple, small words so the good folks in Columbus can understand. What I said was, somebody had asked me, my good friend Spencer over there on the X asked me, remember when Don Garber thought it would be a good idea to move the crew out of Columbus? And I shot back at him and I said, yep, it was the best thing that ever happened to the Columbus crew. It succeeded in getting Columbus to care and pay attention to the team. The team actually became relevant because it was threatened. You should be thanking Anthony Precourt, as you mentioned, Mossy, the previous owner, who is now the owner in Austin, and the soccer Don, who over there on X, which is Don Garber. And I told him good luck in the final. Again, people love to kill the messenger. And this is just the reality of the situation. And if you're a Columbus Crew fan and you're all bent out of shape because because I told you the truth, just ask yourself a few questions. Are you better off now than you were when Anthony Precourt had the team? I would think, if you're honest with yourself, you would say yes. What would the Columbus Crew look like if Anthony Precourt continued doing what he was doing, which so many of you have made very, very clear that you didn't like and that you wanted done differently? Well, nothing. We would continue to be talking about it. Oh, and by the way, when it comes to being relevant, because I saw the local Columbus television station did a wonderful little roast of Anthony Precourt, and that doesn't happen unless this conflict, if you will, happens. Now, you don't have to like Anthony Precourt, and I know many of you don't. You don't have to respect him, and you certainly don't have to hang out with him. You have now a new stadium. You have, you know, arguably one of the best coaches in the league. You have a juggernaut of a team that's winning MLS Cups, and obviously, as we just mentioned, is in a final here when it comes to being the best, potentially the best team in CONCACAF. All of that has changed for the good, okay? Did I want you to go through what you went through? No. But I think you're being disingenuous if you don't look at what happened and not recognize that that was the catalyst for all of this change. And so that was my point there. You're in a better position. When I say you, I mean Columbus. MLS is in a better position. And in order for this to happen, it needed villains. This doesn't happen if there aren't villains and heroes in this scenario. And your villains are Anthony Precourt and, to a certain extent, Don Garber out there. So fine. Use them as villains and scream and yell, but people actually care about the Columbus crew. And you made them care through your efforts when it comes to Save the Crew. And those efforts were in direct response to what was happening with the team going to Austin and moving out of Columbus. And I hate that it took that to get people to act and to get people to come together and unite. But what it produced is something that is better than we have ever seen in the history of Columbus Crew soccer, that we know goes all the way back to the beginning and certainly is passionate and certainly is has layers and has wonderful moments on and off the field, but nothing to the extent of what we have right now. So keep winning. Keep doing what you're doing, Columbus. It's wonderful, like I said, not just for your city, but for the sport in America. And I wish you all of the luck in the world when it comes to the final against Pachuca. I'll be pulling for you, whether you like me or not. And I think a lot of people will too. And it is amazing how far you have come since those dark days. Mossy.
A couple of notes on this final. The coaching matchup is a hipster's dream. We know about Wilfred Nancy. He might have the highest approval rating of any MLS coach in history because of the way his teams play and the success he's had already. And then Pachuca, coached by this Guillermo Amada, who I mentioned on our last pod, is nicknamed the Uruguayan Guardiola. And everybody loves the way his teams play. So that's going to be fun. Pachuca, incidentally, they did qualify for the Liguilla. They beat Necaxa in a play-in game this past weekend. They're going to face Club America, and they're decided underdogs in that tie, although they just knocked out Club America in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. They have a good record against them the last few years, so we'll see what happens there. But if they were to be eliminated, then they would have an awkward layoff of 3 weeks before facing Columbus, so that could play to the Crew's advantage. This is our third straight Liga MX versus MLS final. Columbus looking to become the second MLS team in 3 years to win this competition. If they do, they would punch their ticket to the Club World Cup. I do want to read a post on X from your former teammate, Kobe Jones. He said, "Got to stop saying Seattle, only MLS team to win CONCACAF Champions Cup. LA Galaxy and DC United have won it as well. Don't deny titles." I know we've talked about this before. Everybody uses the advent of the CONCACAF Champions League in 2008 as sort of a line of demarcation, and they act like anything that came before it is apples and oranges. Where do you come down on that?
It's to crown the champion of your region. In our case, it would be CONCACAF, all right? We don't differentiate between previous versions of the World Cup, in which case they didn't even have knockout stages, or they had less teams, or teams couldn't travel, all that kind of stuff. You're the champion of whatever that tournament is, in whatever form it is. So I absolutely agree. And it is, I think, disrespectful when you talk about Seattle being the first team. Now, in the form that it is right now, okay, fine. But you need to qualify that. Because ultimately, if you're saying, hey, we as, in this case, it could potentially be the Columbus Crew. In the past, it's been Seattle. If you're saying, we are the champions of CONCACAF, fine. But you're not the first MLS team to do so. And so Kobe is absolutely right. But it doesn't bum me out. It's just rewriting of history.
And we should say you have a dog in this fight because you were a member of that LA Galaxy team that won a previous iteration of this competition.
Yep, exactly. Hey, Mossy, listen. Do you know how much deference we are giving to the Columbus Crew when it comes to starting the show off with the Columbus Crew? So much so.
Was there some MLS performance that we should be talking about?
So much so that we buried the lead, okay? Columbus, guess what? If we were really doing what we should be doing in terms of getting the most bang for our buck, we would have started off this show with Messi. But we didn't. We gave you the lead. And in doing so, we may have, not done our job. So, shall we transition over to MLS action, and shall we transition over to Blockbuster, which is Messi?
Yes, it was another eventful weekend, Major League Soccer. The headline was Inter Miami against the Red Bulls. The Red Bulls actually led 1-0 at the break, but then Inter Miami exploded in the second half, scoring 6 goals en route to a 6-2 victory. Matias Rojas scored twice. Luis Suarez got himself a hat trick. But the story, Lionel Messi with a goal and 5 assists. You heard that right. A goal and 5 assists all in the second half. He set all sorts of MLS single game records for assists and goal contributions. So Messi continuing to amaze us, even by his standards. This was mind-boggling.
Yes, this was amazing for the man, but this was also, I think, in a bigger picture, how good Inter Miami can be and maybe going forward is going to be. Because again, this was also still an undermanned Inter Miami team. This was a team that, as you mentioned, Rojas, you know, comes on, gets goals. So they keep getting better and better. And Messi doing not just Messi magical things, but in this context, historical things. This is why he leads the show. This is why you talk about him. Whether you like him or not is irrelevant, to be quite honest with you, because you're still going to click and you're still going to watch and you're still going to ooh and ah, even if you're a hater out there. And it's just, it's wonderful to see. At this point, our lack of surprise when he does these things, that in and of itself is almost disrespectful, because he has done this year after year after year, and he shows up, and like any big star, even when everybody's watching, he does things and then builds upon those things and does things in an even bigger way. In this case, like I said, a historical way. It was just amazing to watch, especially in the context of they weren't great in the first half, and obviously on a scoreboard, you thought, uh-oh, this is going to be one of those days where a really cagey type of Red Bull team come in and just kind of neuter and shut down this attack from Inter Miami, and Messi had other ideas.
I've argued that if Messi had not scored a single goal in the last 15 years, he'd still be considered one of the best players of this generation, because I find his passing orgasmic. The vision he has, he puts the perfect weight on every ball. I could watch videos of Messi through balls like for the rest of my life and be entertained. I find that element of his game absolutely sensational.
Yeah, and he only needs a millisecond to see and to extrapolate it out, and then obviously has that great touch. And I think that this team is growing with him, and so now those runs behind that in the past you wouldn't even think of, or let alone to try, you're saying, all right, there's a chance, and a good chance, that this guy is going to thread that needle, and so I am going to try it. And it puts defenders and defenses now on their heels. They have to take a step back. They have to be thinking about that, and the, you know, the blindside runs and the backdoor type of stuff that's happening. Just it's just amazing. Now, Mossy, when it comes to Messi, I got a lot of calls over there on the X machine about what this says and maybe what this doesn't say, and what it says about Major League Soccer that he is doing this. Is this, in a strange way, a bad look for MLS in terms of that constant assessment of how good or bad it is and the quality level of the league, that Messi is able to do this?
Maybe to some degree, but like I said, Messi's soccer IQ is so high that even if he's diminished physically and can't run around as much anymore, I think if you drop him into any league in the world, he would still find a way to have these sumptuous assists and by timing his runs into the box, scoring some goals. So it's, you know, I understand what you're saying, but I don't think it's that bad a look, because it is Messi after all.
Yeah, it is. It does get a little exhausting when people, you know, use this as, you know, their referendum on what MLS is and what MLS isn't. And, you know, when Messi was regularly winning games and breaking ankles and creating highlights and taking souls over there in La Liga and Liga and Champions League, or by the way, you know, winning a World Cup, nobody used that success and his consistent success to criticize the competitions that he was playing on. And by the way, there are plenty of teams and there are plenty of players that are going up against Messi right now. And I think this season is going to be fascinating. And just because he is dominating right now doesn't mean that Inter Miami necessarily is going to win anything. But we're here for it. It's wonderful. And again, for all of you that are whining and screaming and yelling about all of the messy coverage, all right, keep whining, but we know you watch it. we have the science. We have the data. Messi sells. That's the way it is. Where should we go now?
And last point, then we'll move on. The Copa America isn't interesting in that regard. The longer Messi keeps playing for Argentina and doing well, it in a way validates everything he's doing in MLS. If Messi has a great game in a Copa America final this summer against Brazil, then who's going to argue that his success in MLS is only due to the lack of quality in the league when he's still doing it in major tournaments against the likes of Brazil? So we'll keep an eye on that this summer. Moving on, Minnesota picked up a 2-1 away win over Atlanta. Oluwaseyi and Arriaga got the goals for the Loons. They're second in the West, continuing to thrive without Emmanuel Reynoso.
It's wonderful for the Loons. You know, Atlanta just can't get out of their own way right now, and it's not for a lack of talent and ability on the field. But not only are they losing, they lost at home, but this Minnesota team is real. And, you know, sometimes, and we talked a little bit about before, sometimes when you have the best laid plans and they go out the window, and certainly that's the case when it comes to Reynoso up there, you know, yet again letting his team down and not showing up, sometimes it makes you coalesce in a strange and unique and oftentimes strong way. And I think that's what you're seeing up there when it comes to Minnesota. And it's translating into, you know, players that you didn't necessarily expect stepping up. And as a team doing things, you know, the sum of your parts and all that kind of stuff situation. And I think that this is a perfect example of this Minnesota team coming together in a way that I don't think anybody planned, and even they didn't plan, but their ability to bob and weave and to adjust, well done on there, Minnesota, and we'll see if they can keep it up through the dog days of summer.
Philadelphia trailed DC United 2-0, but they rallied to earn a 2-2 draw. Jack McGlynn with a sensational equalizer.
There were a lot of big time goals this weekend in MLS, and you know, people, long distance shooting, coaches will always talk about it because it provides a threat. And oftentimes, you know, you're hedging your bets as a defender and as a defenses. And oftentimes coaches will say, look, we'll give them that shot because the odds are low that this is going to happen. And yet every once in a while it does happen. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad defending, but as long as you're able to plant that seed in the opposition, and whether it's the opposition, in this case, it would be DC United within a game or long-term, in that when you're playing against Philadelphia, now you got to step out a little higher and you have to put more pressure on players because they have that in their arsenal. But until you prove that individually as a player and then as a team that you have that in your arsenal, oftentimes you will just be allowed to do that because of the low percentage when it comes to long-distance shooting. It's not a lost art. It's just a very difficult art, and one of the last types of skills that players are able to master. And very few players and unique players are able to do it in a consistent way.
San Jose beat LAFC 3-1. Rodriguez, Pellegrino, and Buonga own goal accounted for their scoring. A nice win for the Quakes.
Yes, the Quakes, finally. I mean, this is interesting because the Quakes are a bad team. You know, other than, Espinoza over there? There's not a whole lot going on when it comes to the Quakes. So for them to not only win, but to win against LAFC, that's huge. That is big for San Jose. Now, is this a turning of the corner for San Jose? Is this a new look now going forward? I don't think so. But, you know, LAFC has to be looking around and saying one step up, two steps back, or just a constant back and forth of will the real LAFC show up?
Seattle and the Galaxy finished 0-0. Not a bad result for the Galaxy when you consider that Puig and Jovalich did not play.
Yeah, I think that they will take that, even against a diminished and certainly not great Seattle team. But without a guy like Ricky Puig on the field, yeah, I think Greg Vanney will be fine going on the road and getting this. Not a whole lot to talk about when it comes to what the Galaxy is, but also when it comes to Seattle. Seattle at some point is going to have to go on a run if they hope to salvage this season.
Yeah, the Galaxy slipped to third in the West. They trail RSL in Minnesota. RSL beat SKC 1-0 on an Arango goal. So right now they're sitting atop the West.
Yeah, I mean, This time last year, Mossy, we were talking about, you know, Greg Vanney out and just another year of crap when it comes to the Galaxy, but they've turned it around. And, you know, eventually you're going to find a way to get it right. And it looks like, at least so far, they have.
You mentioned some great goals this past weekend. Did you see the Bernadeschi strike for Toronto against Dallas? That was
like
sensational.
Like I said, these long-distance shots, it's good. This is fun to see. And their highlights, they're good for the highlights out there. But again, they don't happen a lot. But I'm glad that it's that it is in the arsenal of these players, and it's fun to see. And it makes you as a goalkeeper, it makes you as a defense, obviously, worry about it on a consistent basis. Anything else?
Last item in this segment, this week, the round of 32 of the U.S. Open Cup gets in the way. The 8 MLS teams that are actually fielding their first teams enter in this round. That's LAFC, Atlanta, RSL, Dallas, Houston, San Jose, Seattle, and SKC.
All right. Well, this this strange saga of the Open Cup continues on after all it was and what it is right now. I think that some of that drama has died off, and as we thin the herd going forward into the round of 32, that's going to be fun. I did see that my Detroit City FC is playing against Houston, so up against an MLS team, we'll see how that how Detroit fares against an MLS team. Anything else?
That is it.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take a trip around Europe. Don't go anywhere.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, save $30 on the American-made steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Okay, welcome back. Should we head over to Europe, Mossy? Some interesting doings here as we get down to the end of the season.
Yeah, let's check in on the Premier League title race. We're still going to mention Liverpool's result, but I'm going to lump Arsenal and City together because those two are the two really battling for the title. Arsenal took care of Bournemouth 3-0. Tyler Adams did not play. Saka, Trossard, and Rice with the goals there. And City hammered Wolves 5-1. Erling Haaland with 4 goals. Alvarez got the other. So Arsenal right now with a 1-point lead, but they have just 2 games to play while City have 3 matches left.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was always going to come. Well, I think once Liverpool said goodbye, we're out of this, you guys take it from here, it's who's going to blink first. And we've talked about Arsenal over the last couple of years in not having enough to get over the line at the end and faltering down the stretch. In this case, they might not even falter, Mossy, and it still won't be enough. But if you had to put all of your money on one of these two teams, as you mentioned, Arsenal with two games left and Man City with 3 games left, on who does blink, or if nobody blinks, then it just and they win all of their points, then obviously Man City would win. Which one would you put it on?
Yeah, I think that might be where we're headed. City running the table and grabbing the title. They still have a game away to Tottenham, but Tottenham's recent form isn't giving me much hope that they're going to do anything in that game. Arsenal have to play away to Manchester United. So they each have one tough game left, and which one does better in that game will essentially decide the title.
And if their opponents are either safe or don't care about the game or are already golfing or on the beach or something like that, I mean, Wolves, I guess they tried to put up a fight, but it was, men and children, basically. And Erling Haaland, my goodness, the different types of goals that he scored and the rise of Erling Haaland there at that back post was just amazing. And I know the pictures make it look amazing, and it is amazing, but it's also, once you get up, and you are able to hang. Brian McBride, for example, used to have this wonderful split second. And all it takes is just a momentary ability to hang more than the opponent. You're done. Because that enables him, in this case it would be Haaland, but it applied to McBride and others, to get up just a split second before you do And once you're up, you can put your hands on the shoulders, and it's very difficult for a defender, especially a defender in retreat, to be able to get up and match it after you're already there. And if you try to time it, the split second means that as you are going down, he or she is still above you. And this was, you know, a perfect example. This is also a perfect example of when you have somebody that is good in the air and obviously has the height advantage out there, just put it up there. It's like basketball, Mossy. Just lay it up for the big man and let them go get it. Or it's like football, wide receivers. Just put it in an area and give them a chance, because with their physical abilities and the advantages that they have, they will do it. And the power in which he came right back across the goal, just, it was just, you know, a wonderful performance from a guy that just lives and breathes scoring goals and doing them in so many different ways.
Liverpool beat Tottenham 4-2. They raced out to a 4-0 lead thanks to goals by Salah, Robertson, Gakpo, and Elliott. Then Richarlison and Son scored to make the scoreline more respectable. We know Liverpool are not going to win the title, but this was the second-to-last home match for Klopp, and some of the good feeling returned. The bigger story for me is actually Tottenham. They've fallen apart late in the season, so they will not be in the Champions League next season. Aston Villa is going to get that fourth spot.
What? So you think Mo Salah is there next year?
That's a great question.
Because, I mean, it seemed like they were back to happy days. Obviously, he got on the board, and, you know, given what happened last week with, between him and Klopp, which, you know, these types of things happen. I don't read too much into it. But as, you know, Klopp voluntarily has said, you know, this is the end of the road for me when it comes to Liverpool, Mo Salah has kind of been part of that and will forever be associated with that success. Has it, whether it's his choice or not, do you think that this is the end?
I've read that he has one more year left in his contract. He might stay that extra year and then leave on a free. I think that's the situation there. But everybody thinks he's headed for the Saudi league eventually, that that's where he's going to end his career.
That would
career,
make sense, so. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, where to now?
All right, let's drop down a level. The regular season of the championship drew to a close this past weekend. We already knew Leicester were going up. They had clinched the title. Shaw Brown's beloved Ipswich Town finished second, so they are moving up as well, which set off wild celebrations there. And we know the promotion playoffs will be Leeds against Norwich, Southampton against West Brom, two-legged ties, and then the winners of those ties meet in a one-off match at Wembley, and they will become the third team to move up. Obviously, Americans have an eye on Norwich because of Josh Sargent. They're hoping that Norwich can find their way back to the Premier League.
And this is that they title it the most expensive game in the season or in the year, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, that's fun. And by the way, congratulations to our good friend Shaw Brown over there, a lifelong Ipswich Town fan, and so him and all his Ipswich Town fans, I'm sure, are very, very excited about the opportunity. And Leicester, we've seen before what they potentially can do. And from a U.S. perspective, we hope the redhead is able to continue scoring and bring that team back in. And in doing so, you know, create a bunch of a windfall and plenty of money for his team.
Now, the topic of promotion and relegation is in the air again. A new season of Welcome to Wrexham just debuted on FX. Also, I read a couple of articles in the last few days, one on Bloomberg written by a Leicester City fan who was essentially mocking the United States for not having promotion relegation and imploring them to adopt it and arguing all the reasons why it makes things much better. You've heard all the arguments over the years. But then I also read a piece in the New York Times Magazine talking about how there are now so many American owners in the Premier League that they're starting to fundamentally change English football and culture. And the piece wasn't necessarily about this, but it did mention it in passing and it got my attention. We're approaching a tipping point where once you get to 14 American owners in the Premier League, that's a 2/3 majority where they can vote any changes they want. And the author of the article in the New York Times Magazine, he muses about the fact that could that be the end of promotion relegation? Could the Americans vote to eliminate it?
Well, when we have this pro-rel evergreen argument, and we've had it plenty of times on the pod here, you know, one of the things that we constantly bring up is, you know, owners, in this case, it would be MLS, if they were to, you know, propose promotion relegation, it would mean owners who have, by buying into a league without promotion relegation, mitigated one of the many risks that are involved in owning a team, which is, in this case, it would be relegation, voluntarily accepting to instate it, which goes against what is best for you as the individual. And so the same applies to this ownership groups. If they can do the things that protects them and takes away one of those risks, why wouldn't they? And so I understand what they're saying. Now, there would be holy hell, because just from a culture perspective, and we have seen in the recent past when it comes to Superliga, the power and the leverage that fans and the culture and the media can bring to bear if and when they think something is beyond the pale. However, you know, times change. And if you are an owner and you have that voting power, oftentimes you are able to silence whatever is coming. And from a pure business perspective, it would make complete sense for you to do it and to insulate and to protect yourself in that way. So I think it's interesting. I don't see it happening, and there would be a revolt. And that it's relative to American owners, don't let that distract you, okay? Ownership of any nationality, if you gave him or her the opportunity to not have to worry about relegation, they would bite your hand off for it.
The other thing I could definitely see if the American owners have their say is a salary cap, because that's something that's very natural to American sports, foreign to European football and culture, but you could actually make a case for that. So I don't think that would be as controversial as promotion relegation. So that's something I could see them trying to introduce.
Look, I mean, all the good ideas ultimately come from the U.S. So eventually they're going to implement it. All right, where should we go now?
All right, we go next to Spain, where this past weekend, Real Madrid clinched the La Liga title. They handled their business early on Saturday. They beat Cadiz 3-0 at home. Jude Bellingham among the scorers there. And then later in the day, Barcelona suffered a 4-2 defeat away to Girona. So the combination of those results means Real Madrid are champions with 4 matches to spare. It's their 36th La Liga title. And Girona, we haven't checked on them in a while. They leapfrogged Barcelona into second place and clinched a Champions League berth. So Girona will be in the Champions League next season, a great achievement for them.
Are we sure they're going to be in Champions League next season?
Yeah, I know it's somewhat controversial with the ownership situation as related to Manchester City, but everything I've read is they're going to figure out some way to make that work.
Yeah, I hope they do. I mean, they certainly deserve it. I liked the fact that Real Madrid recognized that there are bigger fish to fry here and that they are in the midst of potentially winning yet another European championship, and that's where their focus has to be, and that they will celebrate this achievement in terms of winning yet another La Liga championship at the appropriate time going forward. But all of their focus when it comes to Ancelotti and that team is rightfully so on this second leg.
And the Xavi situation is amusing. They were struggling. He announces he's leaving. All of a sudden they start to play well. And then when he changes his mind and says, actually, I'm staying, they're struggling again. So maybe he should have kept his mouth shut until the end of the season.
I mean, right now it's a fight for second place for them, right? I mean, if you were to let Girona pip you here at the end.
And the implication there is next season's Spanish Super Cup. It's the 4 teams that go to Saudi Arabia are the first and second in La Liga this season, and then the winner and runner-up of the Copa del Rey. So Stu Holden is excited because Mallorca will be there. He's going to try to go to that along with Athletic Bilbao, and we know Real Madrid. And now Girona and Barcelona are essentially fighting for that last spot.
Well, I bet the promoters of it aren't excited about not having Barcelona, potentially not having Barcelona. All right, where should we go now?
Speaking of clinching league titles, we go to the Netherlands next. PSV sealed the deal in the Eredivisie, 4-2 home win over Sparta Rotterdam. Tillman started, Pepe came on as a sub and got an assist right after coming on. We know Sergino Dest injured, but all three of those Americans contributed mightily to this triumph.
Yeah, congratulations to obviously PSV, but also relative to the Americans that are there and what they have done. And also, when it comes to Ernie Stewart, who is over there at PSV too, I think he certainly deserves praise and credit for the things that he has done. Not necessarily a surprise, but you know, this is something that whether it's Tillman or Pepe, they can talk about for years to come. We'll see how this plays out going forward for them, but. You know, it's a good feat. And again, I got a lot of time for Ernie Stewart, and I love the way that he thinks about the game. You will never meet a kinder, gentler soul. out there, but he's also, I think, a very smart person when it comes to the game and putting together players on a field that can be successful.
It's been a remarkable season for PSV. They can break the all-time Dutch record for goal difference and for points, which was set by a Johan Cruyff Ajax team in the early 70s. So that's incredible company there anytime you're breaking one of those records.
Wow, really? I mean, this has been an interesting season in general when it comes to Europe, obviously with Leverkusen and what's happened over there. And I don't know if it's a changing of the guard, but it is nice to mix it up. And it is nice to get some of these, maybe they're going to be anomaly types of things, but it mixes it up. And obviously the predictability of some of these leagues is oftentimes what is used to criticize it going forward. So I think some of these leagues can hang their hat on, yeah, it's not always the same. But who knows if it just returns to form next year going forward.
We go to Italy next. AC Milan and Genoa played through a 3-3 draw. We got an Ask Alexi question recently about Pulisic's best position. He started down the middle here as a number 10, played pretty well, and got an assist to Giroud in one of Giroud's last games in Europe before he heads to MLS.
I mean, as we said, he can play that position. I just don't think that it's his best position. How do you think, I think I asked you this before, the Giroud experiment is going to go? And you know, we put it in the context of what Messi is and is relative to Major League Soccer. You think the man with this beautiful hair is going to bring that beautiful hair into MLS and just score at will?
I don't know about at will, but I think he'll do well. He's still got plenty left in the tank. He's had a good season for AC Milan. He's still in the mix for the French national team. So this is not a guy that's staggering to the finish line. He takes care of himself well and is still playing at a high level. He's going to a good team in LAFC. So I see no reason why he won't be effective.
Okay. Where else?
And then staying in Italy, Roma and Juventus played to a 1-1 draw. Lukaku and Bremer with the goals. Both McKinney and Weah started. I saw a quote from McKinney after the match. He was asked about his future. He said he's not sure. His agents are negotiating a contract extension with Juventus, but that he would very much like to stay. He enjoys it with Juve.
By all accounts, from a soccer perspective, it's gone well for him. And from a cultural perspective, looks like he's enjoying his time over there. But things change. And Juventus is kind of limping to the end here. It's not Weston McKennie's fault by any stretch of the imagination. I think Roma is probably a bigger story this Serie A season than anything that has happened with Juventus going forward. But Juventus, AC Milan, you know, these types of teams are going to have to regroup over the summer, and there could be changes. And those may or may not involve U.S. players, as we've talked about in the past. And if it does, okay. But whether it's a Weston McKennie or a Christian Pulisic, their stock, I think, has soared, whether that means they continue on with their respective teams or not.
The Champions League semifinals conclude this week. We'll take them in order. On Tuesday, PSG will host Dortmund. PSG looking to overturn a 1-0 deficit.
I think they overturn it. And I think that it's not easy, but I think that they find a way. And let's be honest, that first leg, the opportunities that they had, I think that they will be buoyed by the fact that they created so much on the road against this Dortmund team. And, you know, their finishing just was not there. And if they get one, they'll get three.
And then Wednesday, Real Madrid will host Bayern. The first leg finished 2-2. Bayern, incidentally, their coaching search has turned farcical. I mean, they've gotten turned down from everybody. The latest, Ralf Rangnick, who they thought was going to take that job, he made a U-turn. He's going to coach instead Austria at the Euros. He wants to keep that job. Nagelsmann turned him down. We know, obviously, Xabi Alonso. I even heard Lopetegui is a possibility, but he's going to take the West Ham job. When you're Bayern Munich and you're losing out on a coach to West Ham, that's when you know something's gone wrong here. I don't know. This is apparently not an appealing job anymore. People think it's too much of a headache to deal with their leadership there and the expectations. And for whatever reason, Bayern Munich struggling to fill their managerial post.
And I wonder what, you know, for example, a Ralf Rangnick sees or doesn't see when, you know, he is looking and at times looking under the hood here. And these guys, some of these guys that you're talking about have been around for a while. And there's obviously something that is spooking them. There's obviously something that is not right about the situation. Whether they have context within the organization that they understand what the reality is, or just even from afar. And I don't, you know, Rangnick wants to coach the team, Austria, but that'll come and go this summer. So he certainly could do that, unless he's really looking at it in terms of a long term and really is excited about what happens relative to 2026. you know, that's fine. Or if it's just an international life that is a very different life than a day in and day out club type of manager, especially one for Bayern Munich. But the brand of Bayern Munich is obviously suffering in terms of people looking at it as a prize and as a valuable type of job going forward. And I don't know what it is. They certainly have talent. They certainly have money. Could be the evergreen type of situation where there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and that could be problematic.
If they end up winning the Champions League, then I think they're going to talk themselves into keeping Tuchel, because they're not going to find a better manager than him out there, especially him having just won the Champions League title. We'll see. Also, Europa League semis conclude this week. Atalanta hosts Marseille. That's 1-1. And then Leverkusen hosts Rome. I do want to mention Leverkusen for a second. They won the first leg 2-0 in Italy last week, and they won 5-1 away to Frankfurt at the weekend. So now unbeaten in 48 games this season. Those were probably the two toughest fixtures left. So they've got a really good chance to go through this entire campaign without losing a game and collecting three trophies. They've won the Bundesliga. They're in the German Cup final, and they've got a foot and a half in the Europa League final here, provided they don't screw up in the second leg against Roma. So just unbelievable what they continue doing.
How would you rate them in terms of their season and their year? Because obviously it's you're talking about Europa. I mean, if Real Madrid were to win Champions League here after winning La Liga, is that still more impressive? Is that still better, for lack of a better word?
It's amazing. Obviously, winning the Champions League is better than winning the Europa League. But if it is Real Madrid and I had to assign a team of the season in European football, I think I'd give it to Leverkusen. I think what they did was more surprising and more unbelievable when you consider the resources. Real Madrid win the Champions League every other year. I mean, Leverkusen going unbeaten and winning the Bundesliga in the fashion they did. And if they win the Europa League and the German Cup as well, it is mind-boggling. So I think I would say they had the most impressive season of anybody.
Completely agree. Completely agree. All right, should we take another break?
That's it.
All right, let's do that break, and then when we come back, we'll have some Ask Alexa for work.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Okay, welcome back. It's time for Ask Alexi, that part of the show where you send in your comments, questions, and concerns. Keep in mind that our handle out there on the social media platforms is SOTU with Alexi. Use that hashtag Ask Alexi, or you can call into our State of the Union podcast hotline, which is, I want to make sure I get this, I've only done it 1,000 times, 657-549-2297. That's 657-549-2297. What do the folks want to know this show, Mossy?
Well, the morning after Columbus's victory over Monterrey in the second leg, you began the morning, as you always do, by asking people what they're yelling about on X. And Andromeda replied that there is no gap between MLS and League MX, that we're actually better, but playing matches that early in the MLS season leads to teams not being full form as the Crew were last night.
Well, we talked time and time again about how MLS, especially from a salary cap and restrictions and rules and regulations, self-imposed and by design, is often playing with one foot behind their back. And it's not an excuse, it's just the reality. There are gaps that you can point to and obvious big differences, especially when it comes to spending and certainly history when it comes to the two leagues. But I don't think that there, I agree with Andromeda over there on X in that I don't think there is a gap between MLS and League MX. And as a matter of fact, I think you can point to some different things, especially when it comes to the business, the growth, the resources, the relevance of MLS. At times, I think you could actually point and say that the pendulum has swung and has stuck on the MLS side. So I agree with you there. Whether or not the Crew win or not, I know that that is part of the equation and part of the conversation, but there are bigger things at play and bigger things when you're doing this compare and contrast. Mossy, what do you think?
It's amazing. A few years ago, the fans saved the Crew, and this spring, the Crew saved MLS's reputation because it was a disastrous CONCACAF Champions Cup campaign otherwise. But this Columbus run has completely shifted the narrative. It's given MLS fans their swagger back. It's wiped the smiles off the faces of League MX fans. And now you've got this one-off final, 50-50, And it's amazing, given what the narrative was throughout the last few weeks, that you could end up in the end with an MLS team holding the trophy. So it's remarkable.
Whether it's fair or not is irrelevant, but to use, in this case, CONCACAF Champions Cup as the reason why for everything, I don't think it's right. I don't think it's fair. I get why we're doing it, and I'm certainly have been guilty of it in the past of using it going forward. But again, what to your point, the perception of the leagues is oftentimes dramatically associated and connected, whether fair or not, with what happens on the field in CONCACAF Champions Cup. So well done, crew. Again, that's like the fourth time that I've said well done and congratulations to the crew of this show. My God, they're getting a lot of love.
Also on X, Cyber Snork asks, you've probably answered this already. Do you think MLS will ever go to a European schedule, and what are the challenges that are keeping it from happening?
Well, the challenges are obvious when it comes to something like the weather and plenty of these teams that for a chunk of the year are playing in weather that is very, very difficult. And as far as MLS has come and as robust as it has become, it's a labor of love, but it's still a labor. And there are still people that are pushing this boulder up this hill, especially when it comes to selling soccer in these communities. And the reality is that it's much more difficult when it's bad weather, especially in all of these stadiums that are not roofed. And so you can't have any type of climate control. If they all had roof stadiums, it'd be different. But then you would have the other problem of going up against the juggernaut that is the NFL. And people say, well, it doesn't matter when you do it in the year because there's always something to go up against. Yes, but you have to be smart and you have to be realistic about what MLS is relative to the NFL and the amount of oxygen and attention that the NFL takes. And so if you were to start at the exact same time that the NFL is starting, you know, that could be problematic. So I don't see it happening anytime soon for those reasons that we stated. I could possibly see a splitting of the schedules going forward. And it does give you some challenges relative to the rest of the world. And so while I certainly would love what everybody is on the same schedule, it's just a very different country, culture, and history that MLS and all soccer leagues have had to work within and work through and sometimes make some very different types of choices, but they end up being prudent when you look at the realities on and off the field of what America is relative to its sports and its history and the competition for the dollar, whether it's sponsorships or whether it's fans out there, whether it's eyeballs, media, all that kind of stuff. Relative to all of these other much more established and much more popular leagues than Major League Soccer, NWSL, USL, and the list goes on and on and on.
Next up, we have a voicemail. Let's take a listen.
Hey, guys. This is Andrew Cody coming from Waxahachie, Texas. Hey, I actually wanted to do an Ask the Mossy question. I hope that's okay if we can change it up. I was wondering, in the EPL, who's your starting 11 Brazilian team? Who's playing in the EPL right now? Who is that? Mossy, can you help me out with that? Alexi, you're welcome to jump in, but I feel like Mossy's the expert here, as he is on most. But I really enjoy the show,
All right, thank you, Andrew from Texas. Yeah, listen, we love questions to Mossy, and I love this question, Mossy. The floor is yours.
Well, first of all, I just want to use this question to highlight an interesting transfer market trend in the last several years. I'm old enough to remember when Brazilians used to avoid England like the plague. They used to gravitate to Italy and Spain because they thought they could adapt better to the lifestyle in those countries and the style of play in those leagues. And that's really changed in the last several years. There are now more than 30 Brazilians in the Premier League. It's the most of any of the top five European leagues. You could easily put together a team now. You could probably put together an entire squad of Brazilian players. In the last World Cup, half the Brazilian squad was Premier League players. Now, I have to say, some of that is because Brazilians go where the money is, and I think they can take that sometimes to a ridiculous extreme. There's no world where there should be Brazilians on Nottingham Forest and Crystal Palace, but not on AC Milan. I think there's this notion that's crept into the minds of Brazilian players that because the Premier League is the best league in the world, any move to a Premier League team is defensible from a sporting standpoint. And I'm sorry, it isn't always defensible. Sometimes there are better options in other leagues, and you can't just go to England and say, well, that's fine because it's the Premier League. So that's my little rant there before I lay out my team. As far as, here's how I approach this, okay? Some of the players I'm going to name actually have not had great seasons. So I'm adopting a form of fallacy philosophy here. It's just in general, my overall opinion of these players, who the best ones are. If I were to put together a Brazilian team out of Premier League players, this is, I think, the best possible lineup I could come up with. I'm going to do a 3-4-3 formation. I'm going to put Alisson in goal. I prefer him to Ederson. I think he's a better shot stopper. And then the back three is going to be Thiago Silva, who is leaving the Premier League at the end of the season and probably going back home to play for Fluminense. But nevertheless, as of this taping, he's still a Premier League player, so he counts. Gabriel Magalhães and Murilo from Nottingham Forest. That would be the back three. The midfield four would be Douglas Luiz, Bruno Guimarães, Lucas Paquetá, and Andreas Pereira. And then my front three would be the Arsenal pair, Gabriel Martinelli and Gabriel Jesus, along with João Pedro of Brighton, who's a player I love, who scored this past weekend against Aston Villa. Actually had a penalty save, but put in the rebound. So that's my best Brazilian 11 of players currently in the Premier League. Now, again, if I was adjusting it for form, there are guys like Matheus Cunha and Rodrigo Muniz who have arguably had better seasons than some of the players I mentioned, but I think those are better players in general, the ones I said. So that's who I'm going with for the purposes of this exercise.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like a pretty good team, Ossie. I think you answered that incredibly for Andrew over there in Texas. We'll see if he or others agree with your 11s there. Who did you not have on that really you were dying to have on, but just couldn't work it?
I don't know if there's anybody in that category, but Casemiro not being in there is notable.
Yeah.
I've just seen such a drop off in him this season that I couldn't justify putting him in there. Richarlison is a big name that, you know, started for Brazil at the last World Cup. So you could argue he's a notable guy to leave off, but I've just never been a big fan of his. I prefer Jesus to Richarlison as a player. So I went the way I went.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, I hope that answers your question there, Andrew. All right. Let's wrap up this show here with my one for the road. Mossy, tomorrow morning, I'll be getting on a plane. I'll be heading off to our nation's capital, as I mentioned before, for the annual congressional soccer match, which brings together celebrities in D.C., some from outside of D.C., and then a bunch of politicians that have soccer in their background or don't have soccer in background, just like to run around a little bit over there at Audi Field in D.C. where D.C. United play, and we have ourselves a big old game, and it's fun. As I mentioned, all sorts of politicians from both sides of the aisle will be there. I will be the coach for the Republican side, my good friend Tony Senna. U.S. legend, national team, is going to be the coach for the Democrats over there, and we will have edits. So I will be patrolling the sideline over there. Some players that you might have heard of will be special guests when it comes to Dwayne DeRosario and A.J. De La Garza, Patrick Mullins, whether it's media guys like Sebastian Salazar and Fernando Fiore, and then obviously a lot of politicians out there. So it's going to be fun. I'm excited about going over there and hanging out with everybody over there. It's for a good cause. It's presented by U.S. Soccer. The United States Soccer Foundation puts this on annually. Congressional soccer match, as I said, at Audi Field. It's free, by the way, if you're there. If you'd like to go, you can see the tweet that I sent out, and it's free for those to come. As I mentioned, members of Congress, athletes, communities, leaders, all supporting a cause which is using soccer to improve kids' lives on and off the field. So I'm excited. I'm going to try not to yell too much on the sideline. I have never been a coach, and people ask me all the time about being a coach and what kind of coach you would be. I think it would be, I think I would say that I would be a much more stoic, reserved type of Ancelotti figure, and yet there's a part of me that thinks that I would go berserk at times and not be able to control my emotions going forward. But I will try to not embarrass myself, my party, my country when it comes to the congressional soccer match on Wednesday night over there in D.C. Mossy, anything else planned this week that you want to tell the folks about?
Well, first of all, I just want to say the Democrats and the Republicans, there's a couple of relegation-threatened teams.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. And it is always interesting because as soccer grows in the U.S. and generations grow, it's reflected in so many different facets out there, including in politics. And you see more and more men and women now who are in positions in politics out there and who hold office out there, who have soccer in their past, who have grown up playing it, who follow it. I'm sure that they will want to, you know, scream and yell about things that are going on, whether it's their MLS team, their NWSL team, their USL team, relative to their constituents, whether it's things that they follow overseas, whether it's the tournaments this summer, and then obviously into 2026. If there is something you would like yours truly to lobby for when it comes to the people that I will be meeting out there, don't hesitate to call in on the State of the Union podcast hotline or send me a tweet over there on the X machine. But it's going to be fun. We will have another show later on this week. Anything else before we go, Mossy?
No, that's it. Excited to be in New York, as I said, but looking forward to seeing you again on Wednesday.
Awesome. All right, keep downloading, subscribing, rating, doing all the different things that you do out there. We will talk to you again later on this week. And until then, and as always, my friends, size the day.